S-R-N. You know, we're sitting here. You and I are like a couple of regular fellas. You do what you do, I do what I gotta do. And now that we've been face to face, if I'm there and I gotta put you away, I won't like it. But I'll tell you, if it's between you and some poor bastard whose wife you're gonna turn into a widow, brother, you are going down.
There's a flip side to that coin. What if you do got me boxed in and I gotta put you down? Because no matter what, you will not get my way. We've been face to face, yeah. But I will not hesitate, not for a second.
Maybe that's the way it'll be. Or, who knows?
Or maybe we'll never see each other again.
Welcome to episode 21 of Cinema Crespo Diso. It is me, your host, Christopher Crespo, just hanging out on this wonderful, wonderful Sunday, joined as always by Drewster Cogburn. Drew, how's it going?
Doing okay. How you doing, Chris?
Doing good, dude. Hanging out, ready to record another wonderful episode of the show. It's been going pretty good, I think.
Very nice.
Episode 21?
Yeah, we're legal, dude. Our show can drink.
Our show can drink. Well, the show's been drinking since day one.
Well, yeah, but now it can do it legally.
Ah, now the show can drink in public.
Exactly.
Without reprimand. So welcome to the show, guys. Thanks for downloading. We got a pretty packed show. No guest. Just the two of us, but sometimes that's the way I like it. Low-key, we got plenty to talk about anyway. We don't need another person mucking up the works over here. You know what I'm saying, Drew?
Yes, sir. Yes, I do.
So we got a whole bunch of stuff to get into. Crespo Dome, plenty of stuff in there, but we'll get to that when we get to that. Of course, we have the box office recap, right?
Yeah.
A couple movies that we saw. We're going to review those movies. We're going to look at the new movies coming out on DVD, a bunch of them coming out on DVD, and also some shitty. So we'll talk about that and what's also come out in theaters on Friday.
Oh, a bunch of them coming out, also most of them shitty.
But, as always, we're going to start with the Netflix Instant Pick of the Week.
Yes, sir. Got
so,
the
Drew, you got the
Crespo Diso Randomizer 9000. Very high technology we got here.
Let's randomize it up every week. We do a different Netflix pick, so you can go onto the Netflix Instant Watch and check it out. See if, because you know, people spend a lot of time wasting time just flipping through all these different titles. They don't know what's worth watching. Netflix throws so much crap out there. We try to make it easy on you. So Drew, pick something out of the bag. He is now verifying whether Netflix still has it because they like to play that game where they put things up and take them down.
Yeah, all the time.
And what do we got, Drew?
I don't know. My crappy computer is thinking.
If anyone wants to donate a new computer to the Cinema Crespo Diso Enterprises, you can go ahead and hit us up at cinemacrespodiso@gmail.com. That'll be for Drewster Cogburn specifically. Yeah. He prefers
Macs.
Apple. Macs.
I don't care if it's new, used, makes no difference to me, just as long as it's not 8 years old and I can update I can update. I can't update anymore. My computer's so old that my operating system cannot update.
Come on, guys. Hit us up. CinemaCrossMedia@gmail.com. Someone out there has a MacBook that you can give up. All right, Drewster, here we go.
This week, our Netflix Instant Pick of the Week is Over the Top with Sylvester Stallone. That's a good one.
That's what I'm talking
about.
It's
a good one.
Over the Top. This movie is not in the Randomizer 9000 for its quality, per se. All right. This is a guilty pleasure type movie all the way. It's Stallone at the height of his movie-making prowess in the 80s. He has the Hollywood by the balls, and what does he decide to do? He makes a movie about a trucker.
Can I read
turned
the synopsis?
Into arm wrestler. Please, Drew, read the synopsis.
Trucker Lincoln Hawk.
What a great name. Oh, what a name.
Lincoln Hawk hopes to reunite with the son he abandoned years earlier.
Yes.
Standing in Hawk's way is the boy's unforgiving father, who will retain custody of his grandson unless Hawk wins the prize money in a national arm wrestling contest.
The only way to do it, the only way to be a good father, is by winning an arm wrestling contest.
A national arm wrestling contest.
The boy's grandfather is played by Robert Loggia, which is great.
Yeah.
Any old school pro wrestling fans out there might find it interesting that... old school legend Terry Funk.
I was just about to say.
He has a small role as a bodyguard. He has one line. He tries to stop Stallone at one point, and Stallone punches him through a plate glass window.
Awesome.
And even then, Terry Funk was old. I love this movie. It's great. It's so stupid.
It's so terrible.
Oh, my God. It's so bad. But it's just... I just love it. It's so...
I mean, who's going to have the balls to make a movie about arm wrestling?
Guy's his name is Lincoln Hawk? What kind of name is that?
Like Flint Steel.
Oh. Hey, keep that one under your head, dude. What are you doing putting that out there? It's great. Over the Top. I love it. It's stupid. Enjoy it, people.
Yeah.
And if you haven't seen it in a while, rewatch it. You know, get together with some friends, get some wings, get some beers.
And it's good for the kiddies, too. It's only rated PG.
But that is 80s PG, so there is a little bit of danger in there. But yes, it is. It is a family movie. And it is about a father reuniting with his son. We'll be talking, or connecting with his son. We'll be talking about that a little bit more in the show, oddly enough. So, hey, Over the Top. Good choice, Drew.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, well, now it's time to check out that weekend box office results.
Yes, sir.
And we get these numbers from Box Office Mojo, and they are estimates. I mentioned that because 4 and 5 are tied. Drew's looking at it weird. I know. It's Box Office Mojo has a list a little funny. For some reason, they have it ordered 1, 2, 3, 5, 4. I believe if you look at the per-screen average... Number 4 has a higher per screen average. So, but just go ahead and start with that one and work your way up. Don't bother about it.
All right. This week at number 5/4 ish.
We're gonna combine them. 5/4.
Yeah, 5/4. We have Epic that made $16.4 million for total gross $65.1 on a budget of $100 million.
Add $84 million international. It's at $149 million worldwide, so it's doing okay.
Yeah.
They're not rushing to greenlight Epic 2 just yet, although they would like to.
Of course.
I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, neither have I. I'll catch it on, you know, HBO. These animated films that aren't Pixar, I usually wait just to catch
wary
on.
Wary of them.
Yeah.
This one's Fox Animation, I do believe.
Yeah, well, I mean, they just did The Croods, didn't they, which... got, you know.
Well, is it? It should say right there, actually. Does it say Fox right
yeah,
now?
Yeah.
It is Fox. So they do have 2 movies out.
Yep.
Man, those guys are crazy. I don't know. This is something that, I'll catch up on maybe when it's on HBO or something
exactly.
Like that. Whatever. So what's the other 4/5?
Oh, the 4/5 this week is Star Trek Into Darkness, which also made $16.4 million for a total gross of $181.1 on a budget of $90.
128,
my bad.
328 worldwide so far total. It's going to make like $500,000, $600 million worldwide.
Billion.
No, 600 million.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's not going to get close to a billion. But 600 million, I think the last Star Trek, one in 09, made about $500,000,000. So if this one gets like 500, 600, I mean, Star Trek, the third one of this iteration.
Will be greenlit.
It's on the way. I mean, it's Star Trek. Even how long have they been making these freaking movies for?
A very, very long time.
Since the 70s?
Yeah.
Goodness gracious, people. Get over it already. It's Kirk is a jerk. Spock has no feelings. Bones is a doctor. We get it.
And he makes snide comments.
And he makes snide comments.
Scotty's Scottish
right? That's his. Sulu is Sulu. Yeah. I mean, come on, people. Get over
Sulu's
here.
Asian.
A lot of Trekkies right now getting pissed off.
I don't all the, care. All the cool stuff I still like the movies.
Except
for the one where...
Actually, yeah, you did like Star Trek Into Darkness, right? Yeah. You enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it. I like the so entire much. Reboot. I think it's fun.
Cool. That's good. You like the
It's high... see, what I like... It's high action science fiction.
It is.
And the other Star Trek movies, they were science fiction, but there was...
Not much action.
Yeah, exactly. Because
it's all about ideas. It was the more idea-driven sci-fi. Yeah. So a lot of hardcore... Trekkie nerds are actually kind of, you know, not too into the J.J. Abrams Star Trek.
The J.J. Abrams.
Because it's all about, like, action, like you said.
It's high action.
They did make a point at the end of this one to be like, we're going on the deep space where no man has gone before. The old mantra.
Exactly. You know,
the explorer type deal.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see if they go the more thought-driven route or if they keep up with the crazy...
Well, as long as you don't go so thought-driven as to have to rescue humpback whales from the past, so a giant cube from the future doesn't destroy the Earth.
Again, humpback whales.
Terrible movie.
Humpback whales might be coming back around later in the show in reference to something. Actually, can I get this right? In reference to the next movie.
In reference to the next movie. Number three this week, we have After Earth. That had a weekend gross of $27 million. Same as the total because first week out and budget of $130.
M. Night Shyamalan's After Earth.
M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dongs.
Outside of the style of the film, the directorial style, it's really not a Shyamalan movie. He even helped write the script, but it's you can tell he's just a hired gun on this one.
Exactly. This is a Will Smith movie.
It is a Will Smith movie.
But it's not
a vehicle for him. It's not a movie for him to be the lead.
It's a vehicle for his son.
It's a vehicle for his son, and it's also a way for him to get some of his ideas across. I want to get into that really in a second. But let's just talk about the movie first on a surface level. It's a sci-fi movie. For those that don't know, After Earth, Will Smith and his son Jaden, who I think he's like 14 years old, they play a father-son. It's like 1,000 years. Did you understand in the beginning why we left Earth? Because we screwed it up.
Well, apparently we destroyed Earth because we're
bad people. Or human beings are a parasite.
We basically made it to the point where humans couldn't survive there anymore.
Right.
So we leave the Earth.
Right.
And let the Earth fend for itself. And the Earth, like it's a... The world isn't ending. It's just humanity's role in it is. So the Earth goes on and other things evolve there.
But then how did the aliens fit in the beginning?
The aliens, that's... From when they went to the new planet, because humans decided to colonize another planet, and the aliens were there. Okay. Apparently, like when we did our first recons, we didn't find anything, and then we decided to make settlements. And all of a sudden, we're on somebody else's planet,
someone else's home, and now they want to
kill us.
So, folks, this is all in like the first three
2 seconds.
Yeah, this is all in the very beginning. Actually, to go through it so fast is why I was a little confused. So we're just recapping the beginning, the setup of the movie. So they develop Ursas, isn't that a bear? That means bear, right?
Something like that.
Ursa Major, Ursa Minor.
Yeah.
Right, the constellations.
Yeah, the bears.
These aliens develop monsters called Ursas that they're blind, but they can smell the pheromones that humans apparently excrete when they're afraid. So they can literally smell your fear. So if you don't have any fear, they can't smell you, hence they can't find you. Will Smith, his character, is like the first person to suppress his fear.
Yes.
Right. His son, a very fearful kid. He's a kid.
Of course.
They together are on a mission to, like, they're taking an Ursa to another planet for training, right? That's what's going on?
Yes.
Because that was a little confusing.
The more you're talking about this movie, the more I'm thinking of Star Wars and Luke going to fucking... train with Yoda.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, it all feeds into each other. Storytelling. Yeah. It all rips each other off. So on their way to this planet to drop off this Ursa for some Ursa training, ghosting training, something horrible happens. The asteroid field screws up their spaceship.
They have to jump.
They end up crash landing on a hostile Earth.
Yes. A quarantined planet.
A class one quarantined planet, and it's Earth. And the only survivors are Will Smith and his son. This is all in the trailer in the first 2 minutes. So the whole movie is really just with Will Smith stuck in his chair. He sends his son out to go retrieve something that, like, broke off.
Yes.
And the whole movie is him just traversing land and battling the elements, the kid, Jaden Smith. And there's really nothing else to it. Nope. There is nothing else to
it. It's Jaden Mook going from point A to point B.
And back.
No, you don't even. He doesn't even go back.
That's true.
He doesn't even go back.
I thought about that, too. It's like they never even. Anyway.
Nope.
But it's all about him making the journey, and then his dad is on the comm the whole time, and he's like, you know, father sonning him, because he's like a distant father, so now he has to be there with him the whole time. It's okay. Shyamalan style comes out the most in the one way that I appreciate Shyamalan the most. Your average shot length in a movie is like about 2 to 3 seconds. Mm-hmm. You know, every time a scene cuts, you new angle or whatever, your average movie is about 3 seconds. Your average Michael Bay movie is like a second and a half, 2 seconds. It's cut so fast. A Shyamalan film, his average shot lengths are like 7, 8, 9 seconds. Unbreakable, the average shot length was like 20 seconds because that one he went really, really long takes on purpose. And I just like that really deliberate sort of filmmaking where the camera is showing you what's going on. There's not a lot of cutting. You're supposed to enjoy the image and take it in. And that was evident right away in this movie. Just his style, I think, works really well for the whole sci-fi story. But story-wise, there's no twist.
Nope.
It is what it is.
It's very straightforward.
I thought it was okay. People are kind of shitting on it.
Well, it's because, you know,
people just want to hate on it.
Well, it's because Jaden isn't his father by any means. He doesn't have that thing that Will Smith has.
Not yet. Maybe he never will. Yeah. I mean, Will Smith always had it.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So.
Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Exactly. Yeah. You can't. That's something you can't teach. You can't teach it. Either you have it or you don't. Will Smith has it. The Rock has it.
The Rock has it.
Jaden does not.
Jaden doesn't have it. I can see him being he's a competent actor.
I mean,
he can have a career. I mean, he's not going to be like a worldwide star like his father.
No, but he's going to have to break away from his dad if he wants to make a name for himself.
Eventually, Will and Jada are kind of helicopter parents. You know, they're not going to let their kids get very far away from them as long as they are legally allowed to keep them under lock and key. And it's interesting. I've read some because Jaden and Will, they're going on the interview circuit together. I mean, Will's showing them everything. He's like, you want to be an actor? This is part of the gig. We got to do all these horrible interviews and it's going to suck. But you're going to be right next to me doing the whole thing. And during the interviews, he refers to Jada as mommy. You know, he's still a kid.
Yeah.
He's a kid. You know, a lot of people are giving him shit because it's nepotism. You know, it's like his dad has the world at his fingertips, so obviously he's going to give him the best shot. I mean, whatever. That's the way of the world, people. Get over it.
Yep.
Life sucks. Get over it. Jaden gets a good shot. You don't get the shot. Jaden gets a shot because of his
Will
dad.
Will Smith isn't my dad.
Exactly. Your dad sucks. Jaden's dad is Will Smith, so that's why he's in After Earth, and you're paying money to go see it. I'm talking to the viewer at home, not you, Drew. We're simpatico here. But, you know, the movie itself, I thought it was it's passable. It's something like if you're at home at 2 o'clock on a Sunday or on a Saturday and it's on HBO, hey, that's a good way to pass almost 2 hours. It's not offensive in that it's bad or stupid. It's just a small little sci-fi movie. It's like if you think about Predator. Right?
Yeah.
We're listening to Predator music right now. Think about the story for Predator. It's just a bunch of guys in a Guatemalan jungle. They go to do a mission.
And they get slaughtered by an alien.
And then the alien jumps them. And it's a small movie like that. You know, I'm not saying it's as good as Predator. Predator's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
But
Earth wasn't that great.
So I say that's like an HBO.
I would have to agree with you. Unless you're a stickler for production design, because that was my favorite part of the movie.
Is that your favorite part?
Yep. The costume and the sets.
The costuming is awesome. That is right. The costume is awesome. I like how the spaceship was like a manta ray.
Yep.
That was cool.
Me too.
Like a stingray type.
The whole thing, everything was very organic. There were lots of hexagons. Like the inside just looked like some sort of weird beehive, you know? Yeah. Everything was very organic.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it did have a real, kind of a real, I did like the direction they took their futuristic take of what happens in 1,000 years. So that's worth checking out. It's like Oblivion. Oblivion looked great.
Yeah.
Had great design.
Exactly. Same thing with Oblivion. Great production design.
The story itself is
But I thought Oblivion was prettier.
What connects those two, though? So you say, we both say HBO.
Yeah, definitely.
For a rating. What connects those two movies? What do you think connects those two movies besides being sci-fi?
I don't know.
You got Tom Cruise and Will Smith.
Okay.
Scientology.
Oh, man.
There's a lot of stuff out there about how After Earth is very much a vehicle for Will Smith to put out the ideas of Scientology.
Okay.
Much like how Battlefield Earth. Battlefield Earth was a straight up, here's an adaptation of a L. Ron Hubbard sci-fi novel, yep, where a lot of these elements are allegories for his story, for his whole religion, quote, religion thing. Yeah, you know, yeah, you know what Scientology, uh-huh, is. This one, it's a little more hidden, but people still jumped right on it. The movie is about the villain of the movie is fear, the emotion of fear.
Yes.
Okay. Scientology is all about how emotions are bad, and you gotta, especially ones like fear, where fear is based on what might happen in the future. Notice how Will Smith kept telling his son to be in
same
the present,
thing,
be in this moment, be in the present. That apparently is a Scientology mantra, to just always be in the moment now, because the past is there just to screw with you and to mess up your mind, and the future, you don't know what's going on, so what's the point of worrying about it? It's just be in the moment, be in the present. Which is, you know, I mean, that's kind of basic. It's so small, basic philosophy. It's, yeah, not like that's unique to Scientology.
No, not at all.
And it has its merits. But then you couple that with the whole, he kept saying, like, get into your senses. What do you see? What do you hear? What do you touch? And that came up a few times throughout the movie. And that apparently is a big Scientology thing about your, like, remember that scene in The Master where Philip Seymour Hoffman, his character, he has Joaquin Phoenix going back and forth in a room, and he's touching the wall, and he's like, what do you touch? Like, what do you see when you touch the wall? Now, what do you see when you touch the glass? It's kind of like that thing where,
okay,
he's trying to get him to open up his senses and think more about in the now, in the moment. There's really superficial stuff on, like, a cover. I don't know if it's the main cover. It might have just, who knows what edition it is. But of the Dianetics book, there's a shot of a volcano on the front. And then the end of the movie takes place. The climax on a volcano. Yeah. This one Scientology guy who's in deep in Scientology for decades and who got out recently. Like, he says he escaped.
Yeah.
And he's put out books about it and stuff. He wrote a little article and he noted that one of the last things you learn, like after you pay like six figures in fees for classes, one of the last things you learn in Scientology when you get to an upper level is how all of our souls have been, they were kidnapped by Lord Xenu, and they were trapped in like these things and put into volcanoes all around the earth. So there are human souls trapped
in volcanoes?
In volcanoes all around the earth. And, you know,
I'm pretty sure that's just magma.
So it probably is just magma, yes. But to L. Ron Hubbard, there were people's souls. That's why the volcano is on the cover of Dianetics. And so is that why that is where the big climax of the movie is? You know, the Jaden's final whatever. You know, I mean, come on, I'm trying not to spoil it. But if you people don't know where this movie goes, it's not very twisty turny. Like,
no,
we said, it's very
all
straightforward.
Yes, it is.
And then also how he's like going from. In the beginning, he's a recruit. He's a young recruit. He's trying to become a ranger, and he's taking tests and classes, and he's trying so hard to get to the next level.
Yeah.
That's called, apparently, study tech, as in, like, technical, T-E-C-H. It's called study tech. It's a style of teaching that's just like pyramid teaching. You pass one level, and you go up to the next level. It's all about going up the ladder. Will Smith and Jada Pinkett Smith opened up a school in California. And it's a Scientology-centered education, and it's all about study tech and teaching the kids to go up the ladder. So this movie is very much his son wants to go up to the next level to become a ranger, you know, and in order to become a ranger, he has to take control of his emotion and his fear, and it's all very Scientology. I think that's freaking fascinating, because also Will Smith is not open about being a Scientologist. If you ask him, he won't say he is one.
Correct.
In interviews for this movie, he's saying him and his family, they're students of world religion. That's how he puts it directly, students of world religion. But Scientology, you can lump that in there.
Yeah, definitely.
And then he just, oh, maybe I'm going to focus on Scientology. This just happens to be the one that I like the most for some reason, but I won't be upfront about it. I don't know. It's
well, you know, it's one of those. I mean, it's some people think it's a cult.
It's a little kooky.
So
it's a little kooky. I don't know about religions that have been invented within the last 50 years. I don't know.
Really? So you think just because your religion's older than it's more, and
I think
it's more possible?
It might have slightly more credibility if it's been around for a few thousand years.
Okay,
as opposed
so what
to
about
some science fiction writer?
So does that mean you're going to go back to polytheism? Because
technically, the original,
exactly.
Well, polytheism still around. We got the Hindu religion
maybe
is
some
polytheistic.
Sun worship. Yeah. You're gonna start doing some sun worship, maybe some serpent worship.
Well, it is the summer. I do need to go to the beach, get a tan. I'll be out sun worship out there. Yeah, dude, why not? Blood for Baal.
Because
Baal. Blood for Baal.
Yes, exactly.
This Cinema Crest producer is not officially sanctioned any blood for Baal. Just saying. Please, no sacrifices.
All right.
So After Earth. So After Earth is a vehicle for Scientological teachings.
And Jaden Smith. So
Jaden Smith.
Catch it on HBO
career.
If you dare.
And it's not bad.
All right. Number two this week, we have Now You See Me, which had a weekend gross at $28.05 million. Same as the total on a budget of 75.
And these are Sunday estimates. I wouldn't be surprised if Monday, when the actuals come out, some of these flip. And Now You See Me is number three, and After Earth is number two. That wouldn't shock me at all.
Yeah.
So Now You See Me, $28 million on a $75 million budget. It's going to get around to, if it opens to 30, it's going to get it around to like 75, 80 million here. Louis Leterrier is a French director. The movie does take place in cities around the world, so yep. I could see it making like 150 worldwide or internationally. So close to like 250 worldwide for a $75 million budget. I could see that would be okay if they're able to get there. I could see that happening. We saw this one today.
Yes, we did.
We saw this gem of a film, this wonderful little movie. What a hunk of shit.
Really?
I thought I didn't like it.
Chris didn't like it at all.
It's stupid. It's predictable. I saw there were definitely parts of the movie that they were setting up, like, oh, you know, the whole movie is very upfront about what it is. It's about magicians who are doing all these like Robin Hood type heists.
Yeah.
Right. And like you pointed out earlier that it's a heist movie.
Yeah. It has little to do with magic and more to do with heisting.
It's about magicians doing these heists under the guise of their magic show.
Yes.
And even then they're they become pretty upfront about what they're doing. It's pretty silly. The movie is about four street magicians that they get put together by some mysterious character.
Ooh.
And they're given all these blueprints that are like projected onto the air in front of them. And it's a show. The girl realizes immediately, oh, it's for a show. Like, look at that. It's for a show. And it cuts to them a year later in Vegas. And now they're doing like they're robbing a bank in Paris at the exact same time. And then later, oh, my God, my head's starting to.
It's a heist. It's like the B Squad of Ocean's 11.
It's more like the C Squad. The Fast and Furious team is the B Squad, Ocean's 11.
Enough class. These guys at least had a little bit more class.
What are you talking about? They're living in those nice villas in the side of the country, and although they did end up wanting to live in their shitty-ass home.
Like
LA,
I said, they have no class.
They do have no class.
The Fast and Furious people have no class. These guys had a bit of class.
It's just, okay. I think I mentioned this before on the show. And I have since read articles by other people online and other publications where they agree with me on this. I'm not alone. Movies featuring magic of any sort or illusions, it's double suspension of disbelief. When you're watching a movie, you're already saying, what I'm watching, I know it's not real. I'm watching a film. I'm watching a very long succession of still images creating the illusion of movement with sound played over it to give me the illusion of a story happening in front of me.
Yes.
It's all fakery, but I'm going to sit down, I'm going to watch this movie, I'm going to enjoy it. That's suspension of disbelief. Same thing happens when you go to a magic show where you see a magician. He's like, pick a card, any card. You know it's an illusion. It's a trick. But you're going to go with it because it's suspension of disbelief. That's the fun. Now we want you to watch a movie with your suspension of disbelief and add more suspension of disbelief when it's about magic and magicians. Come on. Are you kidding
me? It's completely absurd.
And then you can't even do it in front of me. And then they can't even do magic tricks like and film it. You know, you can tell if someone's at least doing a real magic trick and then they film it. And they're like, oh, wow, at least he did it. Yeah. Like pen and
a lot of those cards were CG.
Oh, my God. Jesse Eisenberg. I did the Sarah Eisenberg.
Shuffling his
Jesse Eisenberg
fake
and
cards.
His CGI cards, man. Oh, my goodness. He doesn't know how to do it. That pisses me off so much, man. It's just looking at CG magic in a movie. It's so lazy, you know, and then it allows for them to do things that are that look seemingly impossible, or also what they do in movies involving, like, quote, magic, or even, like, heists like this. They, things happen that are physically, logically impossible, but they just do it so fast that you don't even realize that's happening.
Yep.
This movie's loaded with shit like that.
Uh-huh.
I didn't like it, but
I enjoyed it.
You enjoyed it. What did you? What did you think overall?
It's a heist. If you're into heist movies and you like hearing Morgan Freeman talk, which I always do.
Yeah, Morgan Freeman's great.
For a little bit, there was almost like I was watching a special on the History Channel narrated by Morgan Freeman.
In
the middle of the movie.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, that like 15 seconds.
Yeah,
did turn into a History Channel.
I love it. It's freaking awesome.
Michael Caine was cool.
Yeah, well, Michael Caine really didn't do much.
He did his thing.
He was a crotchety old man.
He showed up with his thick accent.
Yep.
Dave Franco, because
is that the other one?
That's
the kid.
That's the young Franco. That's the James' brother.
Yeah, all right.
He is the fourth one. It's because it's him, Isla Fisher,
Woody
Harrelson, and
Michael Sarah.
Aforementioned Michael Sarah Bergen. So I would say this is definitely, you know, I mean, for a dollar and change on Redbox, it's so twisty turny that I just think it's stupid and a little insulting of the intelligence, especially with the big quote twist at the end.
Yeah, there's no big twist.
Where
in the end.
There is kind of they want it to be
a twist.
It's supposed to be a big twist.
It's not a big twist.
What I saw happening at the end, they just did like one step away from that. It was like, oh, what's the next less one step away obvious thing we can do? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they didn't think. Screw this movie. I say HBO it. Maybe wait for TBS and just watch it with commercial breaks.
I say catch it on the Redbox or maybe in demand.
Drew says spend money on it. I say that you got to think about your time too, people.
Yeah. I think it's a perfectly acceptable way to waste your time.
All right, there you go. Drew's a little more forgiving about it than I am, but that's a-okay. That just means Drew is soft on evil, and that's not even.
Well,
Indiana.
I think that's become a little bit. I'm a little bit evil myself.
Oh, there you go.
So that's why I'm a little soft on evil.
Drucifer has spoken. Let's finish out this top five.
All right, number one this week we have Fast and Furious 6. Had a weekend gross of $34.5 million. Woo! Total gross of $170.3 million on a budget of $160 million.
$480 million worldwide.
Go fast! It's a serious. I mean, on the list. On this list of movies that I just read, it is by far the number one movie that you should go see. I mean, if you haven't seen any of these movies yet. Go see Fast and Furious first.
Yeah, and if you haven't seen Star Trek by now, that means you're not a Trekkie.
Exactly.
So, yeah, of all these, I would say, personally speaking, I would see After Earth over Star Trek.
Really?
Yes.
I think you're stupid.
And God just spoke outside, too, with a bolt of lightning. He was like, I don't agree.
He disagrees.
God disagreed with that lightning out there.
He disagrees with you.
But that's where I'm going with that. That's the Chris Crespo controversial stance of the week. New segment. Furious 6, $480 million worldwide. Yeah, it is the best movie in the top five easily.
Yeah.
It's the most entertaining. It's the one you're going to get the most bang for your buck, for
exactly.
Sure.
Exactly.
And it's also extremely stupid. It's stupid like Now You See Me, but it's on its sleeve. It's all about being stupid.
Yeah.
Now You See Me, it thinks it's being clever.
It's not.
Furious 6 knows it's being dumb, and they're reveling in it.
Yeah, Now You See Me isn't being clever at all.
No. It's so in love with itself. Oh, that stupid movie. Furious 6 is good. 480, it's going to get to 600. Yeah, Furious 7 is going to make even more money.
Oh, yeah, and that'll be the end of it.
So they say. Until they reboot it.
Yep.
Or something. All right, so that's our top five.
Yes, sir.
Let's look at the new movies coming out on DVD this week.
On the DVD.
Escape from Planet Earth. Unfortunately, not a John Carpenter movie featuring old Snake Plissken. Sorry, nerds.
Which is what I want.
Escape from Planet Earth is an animated film, an animated movie. Came out, I don't know, 4 months ago. Didn't do too hot. It's about stuff. I don't know. Warm Bodies, the zombie movie. Zombie love story. Of the two Nicholas Hoult movies I saw this year, it's actually the least worst of the two movies.
Yes.
Because he was also in Jack the Giant Slayer.
So glad I never saw that.
Identity Thief with Jason Bateman and Melissa McCarthy.
Oh.
That's definitely a red boxer.
Yep.
You know, I saw it in theaters, and it's definitely, you know, or HBO. maybe on an airplane if you're, because you're stuck up there. And of all these movies, the absolute worst one to come out on DVD, maybe one of the worst movies I've seen this year so far, A Good Day to Die Hard.
Oh, God, that movie was awful.
What a boring, horrible hunk of shit.
Yeah, it was god-awful.
Screw that movie. I'd rather sit down and watch Now You See Me right now again than ever have to watch A Good Day to Die Hard ever in my life.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind that.
Ugh. Well, I know you wouldn't mind that. So that's what's coming out on DVD. Not too much hot stuff there. So what's coming out in theaters, Drew? What do you got?
All right, in theaters this weekend, the weekend of June 7th, we got
three movies, right?
The Internship.
Ooh,
with
yeah.
Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson. Buddy comedy minus sex, drugs, and parties.
Oh, that's not good. Yeah.
It looks like the worst possible movie ever.
Now, if you're out there, if you're a fan of the Vince Vaughn and the Owen Wilson, then maybe this is up your alley. And if you're fine with overt product placement like a whole movie centered around Google, that's cool. Then this is the movie for you. It is not the movie for us.
No, I'm not going to be seeing this movie.
What else is coming out?
Also, coming out this week, we have The Purge, starring Ethan Hawke, Lena Headey, and some other people.
Which means if we're not seeing Internship, then we're seeing The Purge.
Yep.
Why don't you read the little description?
Yeah, a family is held hostage for harboring the target of a murderous syndicate during The Purge, a 12-hour period in which all crime is legalized. So basically, the premise is we're in some sort of weird future where in order to corral humanity's animal instincts, they let them run wild for 12 hours a year.
That's so stupid.
It is. It's like, okay, so for 12 hours a year, all crime is legal, and then the rest of the year, no, everything's still, everything's all hunky-dory.
It just shows a basic lack of understanding of
the human psyche?
Yes, thank you very much. It reeks of someone who's confusing high concept for a stupid idea.
Yes.
But, like I said, we're not going to see The Internship. So
we're
going to
be seeing The Purge.
And, you know, I like Ethan Hawke.
Yeah, so do I.
This won't be the first piece of shit with Ethan Hawke that I'm going to go see in theaters.
Nope.
And what else? There's one more thing coming out.
Coming out, we have Much Ado About Nothing.
I don't know if this is going to be limited or wide release. But
yeah, directed by Joss Whedon.
This is an adaptation, modern day telling of Shakespeare's Much Ado About Nothing. He shot this movie surreptitiously while he was prepping for the Avengers. Like, it was total secret that he was doing this, and totally surprised people. It just played at the Cannes Film Festival, I believe.
Uh huh.
We'll be talking about Cannes a little bit more later. I don't know if it's come out wide or not. I'm not the biggest Joss Whedon fan. I've been open about that. Buffy Vampire Slayer, I can go
not
without
so
a
hot
TV or movie. I can go without them both. Angel, no thank you. Firefly, please. Cleveland Show said it best. You can't have one ship full of Han Solos. If one person's if they're all Han Solo, then no one's Han Solo.
Yeah.
Joss Whedon doesn't know that. Avengers, you know, someone handed him, someone put the softball on the tee and told him to swing away. Of course that movie was going to be. Yeah, of course that movie was going to be as successful as it was. So I don't know. I'm not sold on this guy. But he has these hardcore fans, too. They call themselves the Brown Coats, which makes me think of guys who like to flash their junk at people in parking lots. I don't know why you want to call yourself a Brown Coat, because that's immediately what I think of.
Interesting.
But that's what they are. They're Brown Coats. I don't want to piss off the Brown Coats. So, you know, I'm open-minded about future Joss Whedon. I lump Joss Whedon in the same area as, like, J.J. Abrams, where they have a following. A lot of people love their shit. I don't get it. I've given them shots. It's not for me. It feels like, you know, Emperor's New Clothes type situation with these guys. But I will still give them both a chance.
Yes.
I will. So I'll.
And you'll be disappointed every time.
Most likely. And that will continue with Much Ado About Nothing. And then eventually Avengers 2 and Star Wars 7. So that's what's coming out in theaters, right? Thank you, sir. Drew. Appreciate it. Now let's step into the Crespo Disco. We need to take a break. My beer is horribly empty. So I'm going to have to drink a beer and then fill it up again for the second half of the show. So we're going to Crespo Disco. The song is a little electronic, too.
Yeah.
I hope people enjoy it. If you're with a loved one, dance it up there in your kitchens or wherever you are. I'll tell you what it's from, what movie it's from. Speaking of sci-fi, people enjoy sci-fi. Might maybe recognize this tune. We'll see.
Probably not.
Most likely not. So I'll have to tell you what it is when we come back. Then we're going to do the Crespo Dome. It's going to be a good time, Drew, just you and me. You ready?
Yes, sir.
All right, so we're going to take a break, and let's talk to you guys soon.
That's all right, it's all over. They were only joking. Come on home to daddy. Come on, come on, lay your head. Let the cares of the world float away. Remember that tomorrow we can look at yesterday.
Yes, welcome back to the second half of episode 21 of Cinema Crespedisa. It is me, Christopher Crespo. I haven't changed. Still me. Still hosting the show.
That's good.
No hostile takeovers yet here.
Maybe one day.
Maybe one day here at Juicer Cogburn. How's it going, Drew?
doing okay. Maybe one day it'll be Cinemo Drewster Cogburn.
Oh, my
and
God.
And I will have a hostile takeover. We'll, you know, maybe the peasants will riot or something. Who knows? Pitchforks, torches, all the fun stuff.
It's possible.
Yeah, one of these days.
You never know. But for right now, still Cinema Crespity. So with me, Christopher Crespo, Drewster Cogburn's here. We're just hanging out. We don't have a guest, but we don't need one because there's enough charisma here to go around for episodes and for days and days. Am I right, Drew?
Yes, sir. 100%.
You're ready for some Crespo Dome action?
Oh, I am. But for the top of the Crespo Dome, I have a story that I would like to share.
Oh, well, please.
As
we get started.
about a good friend of the show recently heard a story while they were recording the last episode of SBK Live.
Yes.
Here at Crespediso Studios.
Yes. In
an undisclosed location. Talking to Soul Brother Kevin in the kitchen, hanging out, doing our thing,
right.
You know. He tells me this story that he's talking to some people, apparently about movies or whatever.
Or I think he overheard
somebody. Overheard somebody talking about movies, and they were talking about Rooster Cogburn, the character. You know, John Wayne played him.
From True Grit.
You know, my namesake, we've already been over that in a previous episode. Download it, listen.
Yep.
You'll find it. It's there. So apparently he overheard them talking about Rooster Cogburn, and he busted in the conversation, you know, being like, no, his name's Drewster Cogburn, and I know him. I see him like once a week. You guys have got it wrong. And apparently they look at him like
what the hell?
What are you talking about, dude? We're talking about True Grit and this character, Rooster Cogburn, and then he put one and two together
right.
And realized that he had just made an ass of himself.
Hysterical.
And I thought that was quite funny that he just hears something like Rooster Cogburn and he automatically thinks of me.
It's like, nah, you're talking about Drewster.
Yeah.
That's really funny. That was a good story.
It's a good one.
We love our SBK radio network overlords,
yes.
Old Brother Kevin.
Yes, we do. My boss, I guess.
Sort of, right? In a way.
Yeah.
That is a funny story. Good stuff.
It's a good way. It's a
good way to start the Crespo Dome.
Exactly.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
All right. Before we get into all the movies and everything we got planned here, let's get some plugs out of the way real quick. Follow me on Twitter @IamChrisCrespo.
Are you Chris Crespo?
For sure. The one and only.
You sure you're not a doppelganger or something?
I've seen pictures of doppelgangers on the West Coast. It's scary.
Yeah.
I've seen it. Drew on Twitter is
@antihero419.
Antihero419.
Same thing on Instagram.
Actually, anywhere.
Yeah, anywhere.
Xbox Live.
Anywhere you can think about it. If it's an Antihero419, chances are it's probably me.
An old AOL messenger.
Yeah, definitely an old AOL Instant Messenger.
Hotmail, which has been shut down, I believe.
Oh, really? Hotmail's been shut down.
I think Hotmail got shut down.
All right. Well, then I don't have that email account anymore.
So hit him up on Twitter. Check us out on Facebook. Actually, the show on Twitter is @CrespoDiso. So don't forget to follow that. Facebook.com/CinemaCrespoDiso. Instagram.com/CinemaCrespoDiso. Go to ChrisCrespo.com to check out my reviews, Netflix picks of the weeks of the past episodes of Cinema CrespoDiso. We are now on Stitcher.
Yes, we are.
We're on Stitcher. So if your thing is Stitcher... or if you know people that are willing to Stitcher, let them know. Cinema Crespediso is now available through that particular radio network type deal.
Yeah.
I'm not even 100% sure what Stitcher is exactly.
Well, I think it's some sort of podcast. Yeah, exactly. Where they just kind of put your podcast out there. It's kind of like iTunes, but, you know, for Android.
Yeah. So if you get the Stitcher app, and if that's the easiest way for you to check us out, instead of going to chriscrespo.com through your browser, you can go to Stitcher. I'm working on other ways to... get us available. I'm making it so that you can get us any way you want, you listen to your shows. You'll be able to get to Cinema Crespediso. If you do listen to us through iTunes, please rate us 5 stars. Leave a review. We beg you. We're begging now.
Yes, we are. We need reviews. We need input.
We need input, people. Please write reviews on there. Please leave a 5-star. Hey, if you want to leave a 4-star rating, we'll take 4-star ratings. If you want to leave a 3-star rating, if you want to leave a 2-star rating, please remember that Mama said, if you ain't got nothing good to say,
don't say anything at all.
Put it on the internet. Because that's the new way. So yeah, I guess that's everything, right?
Yeah.
Those are all the plugs.
I'm pretty sure.
That's all the dirty business of the self-promotion. Thank you, people, for downloading the show. Here we go. Crespo Dome time. Let's see. Oh, you know what? Here we go. I got an email Because I got an email from the fantasy football people.
Oh, fantasy football time.
Fantasy football is around the corner. I know, Drew, you just got into this recently, right?
Yeah, yes, sir. Got into it
a couple years ago?
Yeah, a couple years. Got into it 2 years ago. Didn't play last year.
As a matter of fact, you've only played 1 year.
Only played one. Funny story about that, actually. So I don't care or know anything about football. I understand how it's played. I can appreciate a good game when I see it.
Right.
But I don't follow players or teams. I don't have a team that I watch every Sunday or anything. But yeah, 2 years ago when we did my first fantasy football league, I went undefeated pretty much.
Pretty much. You only lost a couple games.
Only lost a couple games. I won the whole thing. I was number one through the regular league, and then I won the Super Bowl. And it was pretty much a slaughter fest.
And I can vouch, I was in the same league. There were people in there that knew what they were doing. And I had played fantasy football for years.
I had no idea what was going on.
I'll be honest, people. Drew just got lucky with his draft.
He drafted some really good players.
He didn't get hit with the injury bug, and he dominated. It was a great year. It was a lot of fun.
It was.
So, fantasy football version of Drewster Cogburn versus the world. Who wants to knock Drewster off his pedestal?
Let's do it.
We are going to do a fantasy football league. I have a fantasy baseball league going right now. It was hard to get people for that one.
Well, it's fantasy baseball, man. It's harder, it's more of a commitment.
We have it's a 10 team league, and about, including me, four of us are actually playing.
Yeah. Well, that happens.
But I appreciate you guys. Thank you guys for playing. We're having a good time. But we're going to get the fantasy football going, and fantasy football is much different. It's much more popular. So there's going to be more. I know we're going to get more than the requests. Because if we're taking two spots, we're going to do a 12-team league. We're taking two spots. That leaves 10 spots open. We're going to get more than 10 requests.
Oh, definitely.
I know. So this is what we're doing. We're not putting this on Facebook. We're not putting this on Twitter. I'm not going to put out a blast like I did with the baseball trying to get people. This is the only way we're announcing it, via the show. So you got to be listening to this right now to know that we're doing this. If you want to, sign up for the first ever Crest Bonito Fantasy Football League, which will be starting, I believe, in August sometime. Send an email to cinemacrespodiso@gmail.com. Just put in the subject line, fantasy football, so I can keep an eye out for it, and we'll get you in. And put in there, don't just say, hey, I want in. Give us a reason why you want in. Let us know whether you've done fantasy football in the past, whether it's your first time. We're open to first timers.
Oh, 100%. I'm pretty much a first timer.
Drew was a first timer when he played, and he won. He still is kind of a first timer.
I pretty much am a first timer.
So hit us up, cinemacrespodiso@gmail.com. Fantasy football, that's how you can get in. I'll collect entries all week long, and then next week for episode 22, I'll let you know if we need more people or if we're already full. So that's it. That's the only way you can get in, guys. I think that's a good idea, right, Drew?
Definitely, 100%.
Let's see who's actually listening.
I'm ready to take on the world.
All right, so I got some movie news real quick.
Oh, movie news.
Yeah, we got some movie reviews between the two of us, but first I got some quick movie news. One particular actor who was out of the game for a little while but is now trying to make a big comeback has 3 sequels coming up. Can you take a guess at all who this actor might be? Someone who was huge for a while. Took a break from acting, and now he's coming back in a big way. Wants to come back in a big way.
I can't think of anybody.
The Governator, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh.
The Governator.
Really?
Yes.
He realizes that he's old, right?
Yes. And in some ways, he's kind of taken the Sylvester Stallone. Whoa.
Oh, no.
Oh, man.
It's time. We'll have to get back to this a little bit later.
We'll have to table this conversation. We'll put a pin in it because it's time for some Drewster Cogburn versus the world. We don't have a guest, so it is a sparring round.
Yes, it is. It's all right. I'll whoop my own ass.
Whoop your own ass. Yeah, you don't do too well in sparring rounds.
No, not in the sparring rounds.
All right. Well, let's do this week's Drewster Cogburn versus the world. Kind of a simple game, I think, but it's going to be an interesting and fun one. This one is called Scene Partners.
Okay.
I'm going to give you 2 actors, or actresses, whatever. All actors. That's very misogynist of me. I'm going to give you two actors.
Way to be a woman hater.
Sorry, ladies. No, ma'am. The Al Bundy, remember? Married with Children. Anyway. I'm going to give you 2 actors. It's the third time I've said that. You have to tell me whether those 2 actors have ever appeared in a movie together.
Okay.
Okay?
Gotcha.
Now, remember, I'm just asking whether they've been in the same movie. Even though the name of the game is Scene Partners, they don't ever have to actually have to share a scene.
Okay.
Okay. Here we go. I got 10 set. Number one, Cuba Gooding Jr. and Nick Cage. The mega acting Nicolas Cage. The Academy Award winning Cuba Gooding Jr.
No, I don't think they were.
That is correct. They never were in a movie together.
All right.
That's one. Here we go. Number two. Two of our biggest filmic comedians right now, comedic actors, Simon Pegg and Will Ferrell. Both of them in a lot of big movies lately. Will Ferrell loves to do cameos.
Simon Pegg.
The British Simon Pegg.
And Will Ferrell.
The American Will Ferrell.
I'm going to say no.
That is correct. They have not been in a movie together. Maybe they should. That'd be an interesting pair up.
That'd be a bit odd.
Here we go. Number three. Two of our younger actors. Actually, I do have an actress in here. Never mind. I take that back. Michael Cera. And Rooney Mara. Michael Cera and Rooney Mara. She of the girl with the dragon tattoo.
Oh, I know.
Have they ever been in a movie together? That's Drew's thinking noise.
No.
Oh, that is incorrect.
Oh, what was it?
They were both in Youth and Revolt.
Well, who was she?
She played a girl.
Oh, really? Oh, see?
I have no idea who she was. I just know she was in it.
See, I'm trying to
think. I saw the movie the opening weekend in theaters. Yeah. I haven't seen it since.
I'm just trying to think of who she... Oh, God damn it.
It was before she was popular.
I know.
Exactly.
Anyway.
All right.
That's why I almost said yes, but then I couldn't think of the movie.
And I'm not going to make you name the movie either.
I know.
So, but if you could name the movie, I'd be impressed.
Yeah.
Number four. Have these actors been in the same film? Steve Buscemi and Sylvester Stallone. Have they ever appeared in the same film?
Sure, why not?
I love your commitment. They have. They were both in Spy Kids 3D.
Man, I saw that too. They were both... Well, I mean, Sylvester Stallone, wasn't he the bad guy?
He was the bad guy.
Okay.
Yep.
So, where
Buscemi just had like a really small, like a one scene type thing. Because it's a Robert Rodriguez joint.
Yeah.
So, it's like a one scene. All right, number five. Have these two actors ever appeared in a film together? Jeff Bridges and Sean Connery.
Man, if they have been, Jeff was young and I haven't seen it. Yes.
I'm sorry, that is incorrect.
Oh.
They have never, ever been in a movie together.
All right.
Never. But how about the number six pair? Clint Eastwood and Dustin Hoffman. Have they ever been in a movie together?
Yes.
That is incorrect.
Damn it.
Those guys have made tons of movies.
I know. I just
figured both prolific during the same time period. Never made a movie. Never in the same.
So what's my score so far?
So far, out of six, you are 3-3.
All right.
Number seven, Benicio Del Toro and Bruce Willis. Benny of the Bulls and Bruce Willie. Have they or have they not been in the same movie?
Yes, they have.
Any idea which one that might be?
Is it?
No.
No, I have no idea.
They have been in a movie together. They were both in Sin City.
Oh, you're right. They were.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, so you got that one right. Okay, number eight. Have they ever been in a movie together? Christopher Walken and John Travolta. Have they ever? Has Christopher Walken ever spoken to John Travolta in a movie? Or have they been in a movie together?
That's a really bad Walken impression. I'm going to go
with... I haven't done one in a long time.
Yes. Yes, they are.
Any idea which movie?
No.
You sure you don't want to take a guess which movie? Because you're right.
Oh, I've no idea. I really don't know.
You were just looking at the poster for it.
Oh, really?
That's
really?
It says right there, John Travolta, blah, 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 Christopher Walken, both in Pulp Fiction.
Huh. Interesting.
You're just getting lucky on these guesses here.
Yeah, buddy. I was.
All right, here we go. Number 9, Samuel L. Jackson. That guy's been in everything.
I know, and lots of really small roles, too.
Has he ever been in a movie with Kevin Bacon? Another guy who's been in everything.
Ooh. No, he hasn't.
They haven't. So weird.
All right.
So weird. I guess the way I couched that question, I kind of gave it away.
Maybe a little bit.
These two guys are in so many freaking movies. No crossover whatsoever.
Nope.
All right, so you are. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4. You got that one right? Did you get the last three right? Goodness gracious. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 3.
Awesome.
You did pretty good in this one, dude.
Swinging good this time.
Here's your last one. Have these two guys ever been in a movie together? Johnny Depp and John Lovitz. John Depp and Johnny Lovitz.
Yes.
Are you kidding? No way. They haven't been in a movie together.
You never know.
So you were six out of four on that one.
That's failing. That's failing. I failed.
According to Rotten Tomatoes, you're fresh.
I failed.
Nope, you're fresh.
I'm rotten.
No, you're not. You're definitely not rotten. Not according to the RT score. So there you go. That was your Drewcy Cogburn versus the World. You might see that game in the future, dude.
I like that one. That's good. Especially with all these like ensemble movies that have come out these days.
It's interesting.
And there's a lot of, who knows? It could be even in like a direct-to-DVD movie that nobody ever saw.
Yeah, that can screw some people up.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll come back around someday for sure. All right, so that was a fun game. That was Scene Partners. Here we go. Back into the whole Arnold Schwarzenegger thing.
Uh-huh.
Announced 3 sequels. That they're all being worked on. They're pre-production. They're all going forward.
Okay.
Any idea you want to take a guess? Maybe what sequels Arnold may be revisiting?
Terminator.
That's the most obvious. They are absolutely. They've been working on Terminator 5 for a while. They've been wanting to give it to Justin Lin, actually Annapurna Pictures. Who, if you look at Annapurna Pictures, they're pretty new, but all their movies have been quality. Movies like The Master and Zero Dark Thirty and, you know, stuff that's on the edge. They surprised everyone and outbid all the people for the rights to the Terminator franchise. For some reason, they want to make Terminator.
Interesting.
They tapped Justin Lin, he of Fast and Furious 3 through 6. He's going to be working. He's going to be the director for the next one. That's even why he's not doing Fast and Furious 7, because he wants to take a little break.
He wants to hit the Terminator franchise.
He doesn't want that he wants to jump on that. He wants to play with the big boys, and he deserves it. He's gotten to the point where he absolutely deserves to be able to play in a big sandbox with the blockbuster sandbox. So, yeah, Terminator is coming. Arnold as an old Terminator. That's going to be
awesome.
It's going to be interesting how they're going to pull that one off. But who knows? And actually, I think they're talking about him being a pretty major character, too.
And who's going to be the next John Connor?
That's always the thing. Who's the next? That's the one that always changes. I vote for, let me see, futuristic John Connor. Bradley Cooper.
Yeah, not nowhere near gritty enough.
Oh, you can grit him up. Grit him up.
Yeah,
put some dirt on his face.
Yeah, no. He's too pretty.
Well, too bad. He's John Connor. Okay, can you think of any other sequels that he might want to embark on?
Oh, man.
As the sky opens up outside.
There's so many options. I got no idea.
King Conan.
Okay, he's going to do like another...
Like an Conan.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely, where he's the king of all he foresees, but he's old, and you know, what's he going to do? How's he going to keep his throne? That's one where his age is going to be part of the character.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about old Conan. So King Conan, I'm excited for that one. I don't know how they're going to pull off. I mean, you know, it's CG. He can show up in good enough shape.
Oh, I'm sure.
That they can then touch him up digitally, you know, and make him look like he's ridiculously ripped at the age of 68.
Yep.
And then again, with, you know, HGH these days.
Who knows?
And Arnold's never been a stranger to steroids.
Yep, and he is a gym rat.
So, yeah, he can. If anyone can pull off ridiculous physique at the age of 70,
it's him.
Top three guys that I can see being ridiculous freaks of nature at the age of 70, Schwarzenegger, Stallone, because he's like in his early 60s, and he's so, it's ridiculous. But he's all about the HGH.
Yeah.
Too. and Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
But he's more like, he's, I don't know, natural supplements. Maybe going under a knife, I have no idea.
Who knows?
Who knows?
He's maybe, just, maybe Scientology works for him.
Maybe Scientology works for him. Maybe I should look into this, the whole be in the present moment. I kind of like that stuff. Yes, so Conan, King Conan, Terminator. Try to take a guess on this one. I'll give you a hint. One of his is a sequel to one of his comedies. One of his more popular comedies. And it's one that no one wants to see a sequel to.
Well, a Kindergarten Cop?
Oh, I wish. Oh, I wish he was making another Kindergarten Cop. That'd be the greatest. No. Don't put ideas
Twins?
Like that in my head. Yes, Twins.
Oh, really? No. It's going to be so bad.
He wants to do Twins. And actually, the sequel would be called Triplets. Because there's going to be a third guy involved. Any idea who's going to be the third guy? You got Arnold Schwarzenegger, Danny DeVito. Who would round out this ragtag group of triplets?
I have
just
no idea.
Eddie Murphy. So a movie with old Arnold, old Danny DeVito, and Eddie Murphy. Apparently they're all genetically related. Yeah, that's happening. Get over it. That's
so terrible.
That is happening, people. So there you go. That's your movie news for the week. I got to start incorporating more movie news type stuff, I think.
Definitely.
All right, so we talked about fantasy football. We got the movie news. Let's talk about a couple of movies, all right?
Yeah.
Drew, you saw Magic Mike.
On the old HBO.
The old Steven Soderbergh Magic Mike.
Yeah.
I like Magic Mike. I think it's good. Go ahead and Google search Chris Crespo review Magic Mike. You can see what I thought about it. Drew, tell people what you thought about
Well, I mean, I watched it because I knew it was Soderbergh, and I hadn't seen it before. I'm a fan of the director.
Yep.
So figured I'd check it out. And it was a better movie than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Thank God Channing Tatum was only stripping for about maybe 5 minutes of the whole movie.
Yeah, it's a little overblown.
But at the same time, the way Soderbergh shot some of it, it almost looked more like a music video or something.
Yeah.
You know, and it looked good. I mean, well, it was shot well.
He's a classically styled director.
Yeah.
He doesn't move the camera when it doesn't need to be moved.
Yeah.
You know, he's very conscious of stuff like that. Composition.
Framing. Yeah.
The one I got a big kick out of because it's a male stripper movie. A lot of guys are like, oh, I don't want to, you know.
It's really funny that there's really not a lot of male nudity.
There's only one instance of real male nudity.
Yeah.
You know what shot I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's in the foreground and it's out of focus. And,
yep.
And he's just looking at it. Oh, man, that's that was hysterical.
Yeah. There's more female nudity. I mean, Olivia Munn's topless in the first 2 seconds of it.
Which, you know, I didn't necessarily have to see that, but I guess it was okay.
Yeah. I mean, I
could have.
Titties are titties, man.
No, that's not true. I can tell you that's not true. You know, it's I think it's definitely not the movie that people expected. Like, what did you expect?
Well, I mean, I thought it was just going to be a movie about male strippers, but instead it was more of like this character study about this one guy.
Yeah.
And you know, just the way he was living his life, he just happened to be a male stripper as well. And that part of it was more emphasized in the movie, but you know, that's a you know, it was more like a view into the lifestyle.
It was more about like a look at the underbelly of what this, not necessarily glamorous lifestyle is, but you know, these guys are party boys. Looks like they're having a good time.
Yeah.
Let's see what's really going on
exactly
in their lives and what they really want.
Uh-huh.
It's all based on Tatum's experiences.
Well, you know, and that's the funny thing too. It was, you could tell parts of it at least were filmed in Tampa.
Most of it was.
If not the whole movie.
Yeah, most of it was in Tampa and Ybor, which I loved.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, it was local stuff, and that's where he was a stripper. So it was almost like a mini biopic.
Yeah, it was. He was actually, when he went through it, obviously, he was 19 years old. So he was the young guy getting sucked in. But in the movie,
he's the old guy showing him the ropes.
Yeah, he's playing the 30-year-old guy. Matthew McConaughey. That guy, man. That guy.
Wow.
That guy is awesome.
What a character.
he
plays a really good slime ball.
Absolutely. Hair is always slicked back, and he's always constantly half naked at least.
And greasy the whole time. So greasy.
Oh, man.
And I actually thought it was really funny that, I mean, you know, back in the day, the news about him being naked playing bongos.
Yeah.
And then in this movie, in one of the scenes, he's a stripper and he's naked playing the bongos.
I didn't even think about that. That's
really
funny.
The first thing I saw him sitting there playing the bongo, I'm like, holy crap, they worked it into the movie.
That's hysterical. I didn't think about that at all.
Yeah,
that's funny. That's funny. So you caught it on HBO.
Yeah, caught on HBO.
Would you, knowing what you know now, would you have seen that in a theater, yeah, Redbox?
I mean, yeah, definitely, because it's Soderbergh. I like the way he makes movies. Yeah. I like the way he composes his shots and everything and how it all works. You know, it doesn't really matter what, I guess, the subject matter is.
Right.
I mean, so.
And he's done, I mean, he's touched a lot of different
subjects.
He's run
the gamut.
He has. A lot of different genres of movie.
Yeah.
But it's always pretty much style. Oh,
no, exactly.
Yeah, pretty much the same style. It's all,
and,
it's all Soderbergh.
And, you know, he was, they were just in, Tatum just worked with Soderbergh again.
They worked three times in a row. Yeah. Haywire, Magic Mike, and then Side Effects.
Exactly. Yeah. So it looks like they've made all buddy-buddy.
They got all buddy-buddy there for a little bit there, and now he's taking his break.
Yep.
He's going to direct some theater. He might, he wants to direct television. So we won't see another Soderbergh film for a while.
It's a shame.
We saw, finally, Upstream Color.
Oh, man, what a confusing movie.
All right, we have to keep this conversation kind of short. This could have been an entire episode by itself to talk about Upstream Color.
Well, because, you know, I definitely need to watch it again.
I
100%.
I squeeze in a second viewing.
Oh, did you?
It helps.
I'm sure.
The first time first off, for people that have no idea what we're talking about, and that's going to be a lot of you. All right, why don't you real quick go to YouTube and do a search for Upstream Color theatrical trailer
and
just watch that little trailer, and we'll wait for you. We'll be waiting right here, and go. So, how's it going, Drew?
Yeah, it's going.
It's raining outside.
Yeah, dude. I mean, it just kind of opened up because mid-afternoon thunderstorms are terrible. And you're back.
And we're back. Welcome. I hope you enjoyed that trailer. It looked weird as hell, didn't it?
Yeah, it's...
I got news for you. The movie is that for an hour and a half. It's just weirdness. The first time, I'm pretty sure I can speak for Drew when I tell you the first time we sat down to watch this thing on our first viewing, no idea what was happening. We could see on screen things happening. We know, okay, this person's doing this person with the plant, and there's a worm, and now there's a girl, and they're in a club. We can see what's happening, but as a sequence of events, it's like,
what?
It's strange. It's really strange.
It's almost like he's making you put the story together yourself.
He is. It's very oblique in the way he's telling his story. The dialogue is very sparse. There's a extreme lack of what is called exposition. Exposition is when you explain what's happening during a movie. Yeah. Say in a heist movie, we saw tons of exposition, and Now You See Me, where they're like, well, they did this. Morgan Freeman explains, well, this is how they did the trick. And that's exposition. I don't think there is 1 second of exposition in this film. No one ever explains to another character what's happening. It's just the movie just happens. And these characters come to revelations, but they don't express the revelations. It all plays very silently. It's almost a silent film.
It does have a very dreamy score, though.
There is no dialogue for the last 12 minutes.
Yeah.
No dialogue whatsoever, but there's a lot happening.
Oh, yeah.
And I can sum up the story, sort of. I can tell you that it's about a girl who gets kidnapped from a club.
Yep.
And some guy who has like psychotropic worms that he digs out of dirt, he puts them in the girl, and makes him able to like hypnotize her for a few days, and then they pull Pain and Gain, where they make her sign over all her money and the deed to her house, blah 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 blah. And then it's about the movie is really about the aftermath of that happening to her, and then she meets a guy, they fall in love.
There's a pig farmer.
There's a pig farmer, pig doctor / pig farmer / sound sampler, who that I was understood.
Does see, a seemed, lot of weird stuff.
It seemed weird. That's the thing.
I don't want to give any of that away.
On my second viewing, it made more sense.
Okay.
I was able to connect the dots much more. The first time I watched the movie, when it was over, I was like, I really don't know what happened there. Like we had to talk about it, you and I, and piece things together. I went online and I read some stuff what some other people wrote. And then I rewatched the movie, and the story started snapping into focus a little bit. It was very interesting, actually. There's now only really a handful of scenes that I don't fully understand, but still.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. When you watch this movie, if you get the chance to watch this movie, we saw it via
Netflix
DVD.
We definitely recommend watching this movie.
I mean, yeah. I'll be honest. About 20, 30 minutes into the first viewing, I was like, is this a freaking, you know, am I going to be the dissenter on this one? It's not getting me. I don't get it. It's killing me. I wish I was in love with this, but I'm not. Even when it was over, I was like, all right, that was interesting. It was very experimental, but do I like it? Which disappointed me because I wanted to love it right away. Primer, his first film, this guy, Shane
Great
Proof,
movie.
Loved it right away. This one, I didn't love it right away. On my second viewing, I think I've fallen in love with it. I think it's totally, it's got its hooks in me. I keep thinking about it. I'm trying to unfold it and the mystery and the puzzle and what it all means. And there's just so much there that you can rewatch the movie over and over and it opens up to you. And it's very, very interesting, I think. I wish we had a chance to see it in a theater.
Oh, definitely.
You know, we haven't had that chance here in old Central Florida, which is a shame. But you know,
maybe one day
it's still playing in theaters. It's still rolling out around the country. Shane Carruth, the writer, director, editor, composer, one of the actors, this guy, he's doing it all. He's also doing the distribution. So he's taking a movie around the country and playing in different theaters and stuff. So it might still get it over.
Who knows? Maybe one day they'll show up at the NZN.
You may be a show up at the NZN. If you're listening, you might be a good one to get. It's a Lynchian nightmare. You know, it's surreal. It's off-putting at times.
Yeah, definitely.
But it sucks you in, you know, and I was just fascinated the whole time watching it. What's going to happen next?
Yeah, well, and especially,
where is this going?
I was really impressed by the fact that I wanted to know what was happening next because I had no idea what had just happened.
Right.
Like,
but you're sucked in, though.
Yeah.
Like, where are these characters doing? Where are they going?
Can I make sense of it in my head? How much time has passed since the last cut?
Yeah, yeah. He plays with time a lot. You know, absolutely. It's a thick, thick, dense movie.
Oh, yeah.
But rewarding, I'd say. Very rewarding. Definitely worth watching. So, Upstream Color, we're big fans of it.
100%.
On our scale, I wish you would see it in a theater.
Yeah.
I'd see it on the IMAX theater.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
All right, so those are our movie reviews for the week. Got our question. We only have one question.
Let me guess. Billy D.
It's from our good old...
Oh, Billy.
It's from our good old Billy D, the wonderful Billy D. Sends us a little email here. You can also send us a question to cinemacrespediso@gmail.com. That's how Billy sends us his. He says, sorry for the dense question last week, duders. My bad, 2-5, etc. I get carried away sometimes.
Yeah, you do. It's okay, though. We appreciate it, Bill.
We still love you, Billy. Since I am away on my own assignment of assigning, here is my question. What are your favorite vacation movies? National Lampoon's Vacation series is off the table. Searching for an endless bummer, Billy D.
Oh.
So Billy wants to know about vacation movies. Let's see, any vacation movies off the...
Could you consider the first Hangover movie a vacation movie?
No, it's a bachelor party movie. Because you're going on a bachelor party.
How about... I guess Fear and Loathing isn't necessarily a vacation movie.
Nope, they're on a... That's a sort of a road movie. They're on an assignment.
Yeah.
Yep. Vacation movies are like... what's the one with John Candy? Summer Rental. That's the one where he takes the family. They rent us a little summer shack, a beach shack, and he gets sunburned, and like he hurts his leg, and then they end up in a boat race. That one's okay.
Man, I don't know.
Wet Hot American Summer, that's a camp movie, summer camp.
Does summer camp movies count?
I'm going to count it.
All right, Wet Hot American Summer was great.
I'll count it. I'll allow it. Wet Hot American Summer. He took away the National Lampoon Vacation.
The whole series.
I mean, come on, man. Those are the vacation movies.
Yeah, pretty much.
I'll even watch Vegas Vacation over a lot of stuff out there. And that movie sucks. Let's see. Good vacation movie. You got people on the road. I guess we're talking kind of almost road trip movies, too. Because a lot of road trips are vacations.
Yes.
That is National Lampoon's. The first one is a road trip movie,
yeah.
Pretty much, while they're on vacation. So what other road trip movies are there?
I mean, National Lampoon's European Vacation.
God damn it.
Was Eurotrip a National Lampoon series?
No, it's not.
That's
a vacation.
Yeah.
Well, class trip.
It was okay.
Sort of vacation-y.
It was great. It wasn't great.
It was an okay movie. Man, this is kind of a hard question.
Yeah, it is.
When you don't prepare for it ahead of time.
Okay, let's see here. Vacation. Oh, Weekend at Bernie's?
Weekend at Bernie's. Yeah, Weekend at Bernie's 2. They're in the Jamaica or something.
Yeah, yeah. Those are vacation movies, kind of.
With the dead body.
Yeah.
I'll take that.
All right.
I'll allow it.
Awesome.
Okay. Yeah, it's good enough for now. Thanks, Bill. Hope you're enjoying your vacation.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to close this out with a recap of the Cannes Film Festival.
Oh, what happened at Cannes?
Cannes 2013. Couple interesting things I think people will be interested. Drew.
Well, if the things are interesting, they might be interested in the interesting things.
I think I need more beer. Steven Spielberg headed the jury this year.
Yep.
You know, they always get someone like that. Tarantino has been the head of a few Cannes juries. So it's interesting that he was this year's choice. The Palme d'Or.
The Palme d'Or.
Blah, blah, winner.
Yeah.
That's the grand prize. That's the first. I don't want to say grand prize. That's the first prize that they give out. This one went to a French film, which doesn't always happen. Don't consider it, you know, jingoistic. It went to a French film called Blue is the Warmest Color,
okay,
which is an adaptation of a novel, and it's about a lesbian couple, and it's a three-hour movie. The movie's 3 hours, but it has a 10-minute sex scene, a very explicit one, apparently.
Between two women.
Yes, a lesbian sex scene. And that's what the movie, that's what everyone's been noticing about the movie. That's been the talk of it. That's been the controversy, you know, even though it's a 3 hour film. But apparently it's a very good movie. Very, very well done. Very well acted. And again, a 3 hour relationship drama, I guess.
Yeah, that's pretty. That's going to be dense.
That's going to be intense. And it won the grand. Again, I don't want to say grand prize. It won the Palme d'Or at this year's Cannes Film Festival. So keep an eye out for that one. Blue is the Warmest Color. Those of you that are interested in great French cinema, you may like that. And those of you that are horny pervs that just want to see a 10-minute lesbian sex scene, there you go. The Grand Prix Award is the second place award. And that went to the Coen brothers inside Llewyn Davis. The movie.
Nice, their new one.
Yeah, their new film about the folk singer in 1960s New York who's trying to catch a break. Great reviews. As a matter of fact, all the reviews are pretty much saying this is like Fargo-level Coen brothers. Like, this is one of their best movies. And we're talking about the Coen brothers, man.
Yeah.
No Country for Old Men. True Grit. And those are just, you know, the most recent ones. Fargo, Big Lebowski, Hudsucker Proxy, Barton Fink, Miller's Crossing, all fantastic.
All great
Raising
movies.
Arizona. I mean, come on, people. Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou? Everyone loves Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou? And apparently, people love this movie inside Llewyn Davis. We'll get to see it in December.
Yeah.
Is when it comes out in theaters. So that won the Grand Prix Award. Or the Grand Prix.
Good. If you're Coen Brothers.
If you're an American. Bruce Stern. He won Best Actor for his role in Alexander Payne's Nebraska. Alexander Payne, did you ever see Election?
No.
Reese Witherspoon and Broderick.
Yes.
The high school.
Yes.
Election. That's a really good little movie. That's Alexander Payne. He also did Sideways.
Great movie.
And what was his most recent one? He did the one with Jack Nicholson about Schmidt.
Missed that one.
That's a pretty good one. That's a type of movie where it depends on your mood, your point of view.
Yeah.
Either it's a comedy or it's depressing as hell.
Ah, awesome.
It's very interesting. And what was Payne's? The Descendants.
Missed that one too with George Clooney. I heard it's a great movie.
That's a really good, really good movie. This guy's really good at just making dramas, character-based films. You know, you're not going to see Payne making a comic book movie anytime soon.
Yeah.
His movie Nebraska is about this older fella, Bruce Dern, who maybe he's a drunk. He's a drunk. Maybe he's a little senile. And he has like he won a sweepstakes, but it's like a publisher's clearinghouse type thing. Like, he may not have really won. He just has a thing that says you may have won.
Yeah.
But he's going to go on a road trip from Montana to Nebraska with his son to go claim the prize.
This prize that may or may not exist.
It's a black and white film. People really like it. It's supposed to be a pretty solid movie, and Bruce Dern is supposed to be great.
Man, the last black and white film I saw, I think, was Das Weissband.
That was, what, 2010?
Yeah.
Something like that. The Artist was the last one I saw.
Children of the Corn.
Have you seen The Artist?
In German.
Yeah, Children of the Corn, but for real. Like yeah. Before, was that before World War One or World War Two?
Just before World War One.
World War One. Before the Kaiser Wilhelm.
Yeah.
All right. So Bruce Stern, best actor. Nicholas Winding Refn.
Yes.
He put out
the man who
man behind Drive,
one of my favorite movies of all time.
Drive played last year's Cannes Film Festival, won the Palme d'Or.
Yes.
This year, his new movie, Only God Forgives, also starring Ryan Gosling. Actually, it was 2011. The newest movie with Ryan Gosling played there this year in competition and was not received very well. As a matter of fact, it was booed when it was all over.
Really? Because yes. The trailer looks pretty freaking crazy. The
trailer looks great. I read some of the negative stuff that people are talking about it, and people are hating on it because it's a Nicholas Winding Refn movie. It's like they're expecting something more like Drive. Drive is by far his most accessible mainstream movie. Everything else that he's made has been very arty. On the verge of pretentious, very, very thick layered. His movie like Valhalla Rising, there's no dialogue in it. There's one scene where it's just 10 minutes of guys on a boat like drifting through the fog. That's a little hard to sit through that part.
I'm sure.
So it just sounds like he made another Nicholas Winding Refn movie, and this time everyone was like, oh, it's not like Drive, boo. Something to note. The Cannes Film Festival audiences have always been known to be a fickle bunch.
Yes.
And they love to boo their movies. They love to boo movies. And
they love to cheer.
They love to give movies 20 minute standing ovations, which is both of them stupid. I got a short, very short list here of movies booed at Cannes over the years.
All right.
Back in 1960, there's a film called La Ventura, Drew. It's by Michelangelo Antonioni. I just like saying his name.
Yeah.
That movie is considered a classic. You know, it's a beloved film. That movie was booed so hard at the 1960 Cannes Film Festival that the director and the lead actress had to leave the screening.
Oh, wow.
They were like, this is too much. We can't take it. That movie, at that year, ended up winning the jury prize, which is the third place prize at the Cannes Film Festival.
Okay.
So, and that's something to keep note of, right? That movie still won a prize and was booed.
And it was booed.
In 1976, Martin Scorsese's Taxi Driver.
Oh.
When it won, not at the screening, but when it won the Palme d'Or, and they announced it at the press conference, it was booed at that ceremony.
Oh, wow.
They booed that announcement. And that year, the jury chairman, the head of the jury, 76 Cannes Film Festival, Tennessee Williams.
Really?
Yeah.
Weird.
That is weird, right? That's when Taxi Driver won, and Taxi Driver was booed for winning. In 1990, David Lynch's Wild at Heart. That's one. I don't know if you've seen that one. Nicolas Cage is like obsessed with Elvis, and it's two lovers on the run. It's a very surreal. It's David Lynch, you know.
Yeah.
That's around his like weird road period where he did stuff like Lost Highway. That one actually was cheered and booed simultaneously.
Nice.
At the same screening.
So half people really liked it, half people thought it was garbage.
And most recently, Palme d'Or winner The Tree of Life was booed at its screening. Booed pretty hard.
I would have just fallen asleep. I would have had the chance to boo.
When I saw that movie, I was enchanted by it.
Yes.
I was entranced. I love that film. Also happening at the most recent Cannes Film Festival, real quick, Behind the Candelabra debuted. That's Steven Soderbergh's Liberace biopic.
Yeah, it's on the HBO. Can't wait to see it.
It's on the HBO. We haven't had a chance to see it. I really wanted to watch it for this week's show, but
didn't happen.
We'll watch it this week, and we'll talk about it next week, hopefully, for episode 22. And then after that, no more Soderbergh films for who knows how long. And then Jim Jarmusch of Ghost Dog, Way of the Samurai.
Ah, very nice.
That guy, he's been, you know, an auteur on the fringe for years, since the 80s. He's also been big with the Cannes Film Festival audiences. He had a new movie coming out this year, played at the fest. People loved it. It's called Only Lovers Left Alive, and it's a vampire love story.
Sweet.
With Tilda Swinton, who she looks like a vampire.
Yeah.
She's all pale. And Tom Hiddleston. The Loki from the Avengers.
Oh, okay. He looks like a vampire, too. He's all pasty.
Yeah, so they're vampire lovers. And one review that I read, someone wrote that for the first hour of the movie, he thought that he was watching the greatest movie ever made.
Wow.
And then the second half of the movie, he just had to settle for one of the greatest movies he's seen this year.
Duh.
So, I don't know. That intrigues me. This is apparently Jim Jarmusch coming back to form. His last movie, The Limits of Control, was about this dude, an assassin, going after his target, but it, It's not really about that, though. It's about this dude sitting in cafes and drinking coffee. And
awesome.
Oh, my goodness. That's a sit. That's a sit, I'll tell you. But this one's supposed to be great, so I'm really looking forward to that. I mean, Ghost Dog, Way of the Samurai. That's a great movie, right, Drew?
It is. Forrest Whitaker plays a badass.
Oh, he's so badass in that. That made me go out and get the Haiga Curry.
Yeah.
And I read it, and I added notes, and I'm going to have to break that book out and get me some samurai wisdom.
Hell yeah.
So that was the Cannes Film Festival. A lot of interesting stuff happening there. And these movies like Inside Llewellyn Davis, Only God Forgives, is supposed to come out here at the end of July.
Yep.
We'll eventually see Jim Jarmusch. Jim Jarmusch's movie will probably play at the Enzion. Nebraska will probably play. It is black and white. That'll probably be an Enzion deal. And then Behind the Candelabra, HBO.
HBO, yeah.
So there you go. All right, so that's it. That's the end. Man, it's about an hour and a half worth of show there.
Oh, not bad.
Not bad, guys. You got a little bit of extra show. Hope you enjoyed it. That was episode 21. Thanks a lot, Drew.
You're very welcome, Chris.
Appreciate it. Thank you for listening, people. Make sure to tell your friends, spread the word, let everyone know that we're out there. And the more listeners, the better. Am I right?
Of course.
All right, so we'll be back next week. We're going to have, we got a special guest next week. Super special guest.
Super.
I ain't going to say who it is yet. If you want to know who it is, follow me on Twitter. I am Chris Crespo. I'll let you know. And then we got a guest for a week after that. So
yes, we do. That one's going to be rough.
That's going to be a rough one for Drew Sacogman versus the world.
It's going to be rough.
And what's that? Hashtag DCVTW?
Yeah. Hashtag DCVTW.
DCVTW. Drew Sacogman versus the world. All right, guys. We're out of here. ChrisCrespo.com. Go to it now.
Don't say that.
Oh, come on, Adrian. It's true. I was nobody. But that don't matter either, you know? Because I was thinking. It really don't matter if I lose this fight. It really don't matter if this guy opens my head either. Because all I want to do is go the distance. Nobody's ever gone the distance with Creed. And if I can go that distance, you see, and that bell rings and I'm still standing. I'm going to know for the first time in my life, see, that I weren't just another bum from the neighborhood.